This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network with another recording of a public event in our area. I'm Sean Tubbs. Voters in Charlottesville will go to the polls this May to elect two city councilors and three members of the school board. Council has always been elected, but this is the first time in several decades that the electorate has had a chance to decide who will govern the city's schools. Though the elections are nonpartisan, Charlottesville City Democrats held the first of many candidates' forums on Saturday, March 18th, with all six candidates in attendance. The event was introduced by Bill Lucy, who fills us in on some of the details.
As you know, this is the first year of school board elections with three seats at large on the election day of May 2nd. A second round of elections will be held in November of 2007 at the regular general election next year. There will be four seats at that time for a total of seven. We don't know yet whether those will be at large or by district.
Saturday's candidates forum was moderated by Sean O'Brien of the Sorenson Institute for Political Leadership, who now takes over this podcast.
Good morning. Thank you all for coming. In the self-serving public service announcement realm, the Sorenson Institute is all about good government and getting people to participate in civic life. And so having all of you here is really wonderful because you're participating in a way that most people don't. And the six people up here are really participating in a way that most people don't. And before we even get started, I always like to thank people for putting themselves out there because it is a challenging thing to do personally and potentially professionally. And I want to thank you all for putting yourselves out there for us to hear from you and to choose amongst you or between you. So anyway, what I want to do is give the six of them each an opportunity to introduce themselves in about 2 minutes, and then I want to ask a couple of questions that I'm going to ask them all to answer, and then I want to open it up to audience questions. And when we do the audience questions, I would like to ask you to address your question to a specific person. Because what I would rather have is have all of the questions get asked than all of the questions get answered by everybody. That way all of the candidates get to hear what everybody's concerns are, even though you don't necessarily get to hear back from all of them. And if any of them really feel passionate about one of the questions that you asked, then perhaps they'll find you afterwards and tell you if they weren't the person who got to answer it. Okay, and then if we have extra time, maybe we can go into some extra people. For reference, we've got the WINA here for the beginning of thing, and Sean Tubbs is here with the Virginia or the Charlottesville Podcast Network, and he's going to be recording the whole thing, and it'll be up on the Charlottesville Podcast website. And the progress is here, somewhere over there, and they're taking pictures as well. And Sean is also doing a thing for WVTF, so we'll get plenty of coverage for the event today. I'm going to ask you all to pass that microphone back and forth, and I'm just going to start at the far end and let Vance start by introducing himself. I'm going to let everybody introduce themselves and we'll just go around.
Okay, my name is Vance High. I want to thank you all for coming this morning. And if there's anyone out there among the 717 that voted for me in the council elections 2 years ago, I also offer a dutiful thanks. I've got over 10 years of teaching diverse populations from the severely handicapped to the gifted. And over 30 years volunteer experience demonstrating innovation, being a team player, and also being a bridge builder. And I can give you examples or handouts up here if you want to see what kind of volunteer work I've done. We have some major issues right now in the Charlottesville School District. One is the dropout rate, especially among the Afro-Americans, which is hovering around 34%. We've also had four superintendents in the last 5 years. Place your blames where you want to, but I'm not pointing fingers today. There are things that can be addressed to help these people who are dropping out. A lot of them are single parents, and yes, there's a social economic component to that. We can teach the parents how to teach their kids in a very simple and unobtrusive way and very cost effective. We also have some issues right now of behavioral problems in the city schools. We've all, I hope, seen the last 2 days the daily progress on the front page about problems at Buford. I talked to Tim Flynn yesterday about those issues and some suggestions, and we were on the same page. We need a larger alternative school so we can accommodate some of those people that are suspended because we are obligated to teach them and not bring them back into the school where they will be potentially another problem, another altercation. That's an easy solution. That just requires a little bit of money. Right now, Charlottesville High School doesn't even rank among the top 50 high schools in the state of Virginia. I'm sorry, it doesn't. They have a great band, but the band only serves one component of the student population over there. We need to serve all of those people, and we need to address the ones that have dropped out so they are effective and can live rewarding lives in our community or outside of it. So there are some things that can be done fairly simple, cost-effective, and things that I can offer through my leadership, which I've demonstrated, and I'll be glad to offer some suggestions here. In closing, in my opening comments, I am dedicating this run to a former student of mine, Corporal Jeffrey Starr, United States Marine Corps. He died in Ramada from a sniper May 30th. I taught him, as I'm asking you now, always question, look for answers, go to the polls, and vote. He did. He offered his life, and I cannot not run because I had to honor him as well as others who died for that freedom and that voice of opinion.
My name is Sue Lewis. Many of you know me. I've been around for a long time. I'm a native of New York State, a product of the New York Public Schools, and have been a resident of Charlottesville for the last 30 years and actually 5-plus years before that. My children started school in the Charlottesville system. They began their formal education in the Charlottesville system, and my youngest child graduated Charlottesville High School. When we moved back here from Arkansas in 76, we made a decision to move into the city so that our child could finish high school in Charlottesville. We've been committed to the public schools in Charlottesville for that long. I'm just going to give you some personal stuff because my flyer doesn't have any personal stuff on it. I have actually, as many of you know, applied for an appointed position on the school board since 1986. So this is not something that I've just come to now and said, why don't I try to be on the school board? I have a passion for education. I intended at one time to be a teacher of math or English. Had a different career that popped up for me. I do not have an educational philosophy per se. I leave that to the professionals. I am a person who, when I sit on a board, I try to find out what the issues are, see what I can offer to solve the problems. I'm an open person, a listener. I don't go into any board, and I've served on several, as you'll see. And I don't go in onto a board with a preconceived idea of what I want to do. What I go on boards for is to see what I can do to help that entity become the best it can be. And that's what I intend to do if I am elected to the school board.
Thank you. I think that I will stand up. My name is Quan Diego Wade, and it's truly an honor to be here this morning. I appreciate this opportunity. The issues that will be discussed over the next 6 weeks will have implications on every student in the Charlottesville public school system and every citizen in the city of Charlottesville. In November 2005, the citizens of the city of Charlottesville made it crystal clear that they wanted a change in how the school board was appointed and how we educated our children. And this is an opportunity for you as the public to implement that change. I want to be on the school board because I want to be part of the solution. I want to be part of the catalyst of change that will allow the school system to flourish and each and every child to be valued and cherished. I've worked with students and children for the past 20 years, 15 right here in the city of Charlottesville. I've worked directly with students, parents, and administration. I've heard and I've seen the wonderful opportunities afforded in this public school system, but I've also seen areas that could and should be changed. During the process of collecting petitions, meeting in living rooms, and talking in parking lots, I've heard the concerns of the citizens of the city of Charlottesville. And some of these concerns includes, you know, the viability, the long-term viability of the school system with such a high dropout rate. The school administration not being, should be more accountable. The relationship between the parents and the school administration. And more importantly, that the school board and the school administration should be more community-oriented. These are some very important issues that should be discussed and addressed. I want to be on the school board, and if I'm elected, there are a couple of things that I will focus on. One is outreach to parents and the community. And I think that if this is done effectively, then you will see those grades and some of these discipline problems that we have evaporate. And I also will focus on rewarding teacher initiative. This is a very exciting time for the Charlottesville Public School System. With a new superintendent and a new school board makeup, this is a time that we can implement this change. And before I end, I just want to share a short story with you about this young lady that I mentored a few years ago. She was in Buford School. She got an assignment at the beginning of the year that a science project that in the springtime she would have to present this project. And here it is September. She had no idea what she wanted to do. We talked about some of the things of her interests and that she liked to do. She finally chose a project. It started off kind of slow, but as the semester went on and on, she started doing more research, more reading, and she started doing things that was above and beyond the call of duty. Springtime came around. I was honored that she asked me to be part to be there when she presented. So I walk into Buford cafeteria. Place is full with science projects, parents, teachers, and students. But I noticed a young lady that I mentored. She was over in the corner, the beaming light. She was so proud of the work that she had done. And when she made a presentation, she was confident, and she didn't win first place, second place, but she didn't even place, but she was happy that she had done her best and that she liked the experience of learning. And this is what I would do if I'm on the school board. Leah has the same vision as I do, and I thank you for this opportunity. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Leah Perrier, and I would like to be your next school board member. I have been a resident of the city of Charlottesville since 1983. At the time my husband and I were looking for housing, we made a concentrated effort and a positive decision to live in the city of Charlottesville. And our children are products of the Charlottesville public school system, and they are happy graduates from Charlottesville High School. One of my major concerns during this next 6 weeks campaign are the achievement gap, and how we can, as a community, as parents, grandparents, aunts, and uncles, address this achievement gap. I am concerned that we have an adequate per-pupil ratio with regard to students and pupils, and our dollars are also adequate. But my concern is, given the amount of money that we spend per pupil and looking at where we are within the state and other school systems, what is it that we are doing from a positive vein, and what is it that we may need to tweak and improve? And those are things that we will hope to discuss during the next 6 weeks. Secondly, I am concerned about our programs and our personnel. Are we evaluating them effectively? The state has given us standards of learning that each student and each school must reach, and our concerns need to be, how are we exploring these things from a holistic approach? We live in Charlottesville, Virginia, with one of the leading schools of education, the Curry School of Education, in our backyard. And what is it that we must do to reconnect with the Curry School and reaffirm our bridge and our connections with the Curry School? As the director of the Upward Bound program at the University of Virginia, I have worked extensively with the Curry School in various areas such as curriculum and instruction, counseling, education, administration, and supervision. And I'm certain that some of these things will be able to be transferred to our school system. Lastly, I am concerned about safety of all people in our buildings, not only our students, but our instructors and administrators. And are we doing everything that we need to do? Do they have sufficient funds within each and every building to go every day and feel safe? Our attendance rates are up, and so obviously our students feel safe. At any given day, something can happen. And are the tools that we need in each and every building within our system so that we can continue to work effectively? The students in the Upward Bound program are often those students that you feel will not achieve. I recruit from 12 high schools in the Central Virginia area, and Charlottesville High School is one of them, with the preponderance of those students in my program at Charlottesville High School coming from the south side of the city. They graduate from Charlottesville High School. They go to such institutions as the University of Virginia, Duke, Smith, William & Mary, JMU, and my alma mater, Hampton University. And they graduate from those colleges. And that experience will be transferred if I am elected to the school board.
Thank you. I'm going to stand up because I have a hard time staying seated for too long. And I have to say, I'm not used to having an audience that's so attentive and well-behaved, so I feel a little bit out of place here. My name is Charlie Colmansberger, and I'm running for school board. I am a former educator from the city schools. I spent the last 5 years teaching in special education at Greenbrier Elementary School. 4 of those years I spent mentoring student teachers from the University of Virginia, and prior to that, I spent time working in a variety of educational settings, volunteer at Head Start, dorm parent coach, and part-time teacher at St. Anne's Belfield. The reason I'm running for school board, and when I say this, I have to tell you a funny story. Is Sarah Bear here? Sarah, thank you for your press about the schools and the school board, but I have a funny story. Sarah Barry asked me last week, why are you running for school board? And I said, well, the same reason I wanted to be a teacher, for the money. And I hear, in the background, I hear her typing. I'm like, oh, my gosh. I said, I'm just kidding. The reason I'm running for school board is because I believe, like many of you, that the quality of the community is based upon the community involvement and people being involved in our community. I'm committed to education, and no matter what any national magazine says about Charlottesville, I don't think we can call ourselves a world-class community unless we provide our students with a first-class education. I feel that also that I have the experience and educational background to make a positive contribution to the school board and to implement change in the way we do things. And also I feel like especially given last year's events, that it's essential that the school board better reflects those who it represents. And in terms of goals, I have to say that I agree with a lot that has been said. First of all, in working on improving and increasing collaboration and communication with our parents, our school staff, and the community, I believe that we need to focus our resources and community and school resources on factors that impact student achievement. And finally, I would like to say that we need to work to ensure that our schools maintain high expectations for academic success and student conduct. Thank you.
I'm Ned Mickey, and I am have been on the school board for a year and a half now and would like to continue to be on the school board. I think in all the bad press we've had, particularly recently in the schools, it's important to keep in mind all that's right with our schools. Our high school has been ranked in the top 500 in the nation by national publications. We have more AP courses than any school in the area, public or private. In 1989, we had 13 AP courses with 55 students, and 75% of those received a 3 or higher. That's a passing grade. In 2005, we have 20 AP subjects and 142 students taken. So that's about 3 times as many students. And our pass rate for college credit is 88% compared to the state's is 61%. We now have 5 dual enrollment courses with Piedmont. Our SAT scores in 1995 were an excellent 1040. Our average in 2005 is 1100. That's 70 points above the state average and 72 points above the national average. Our orchestra and band are really the finest in the state and one of the best programs in the nation. We have all kinds of academic teams that go on to compete in regional and state competitions and win those competitions. 200 kids from out of district pay to go to our schools. We have our high-achieving kids can go to the best colleges and get the best jobs in the nation. But as you know, that's not the whole story of our schools. And if that was the whole story of schools, I would not have applied for the school board before, and I wouldn't be running for it now. The whole story is that we have a large segment of underachieving kids that are not succeeding in our schools, and they're not doing as well as they are in other districts with high at-risk population. And we simply have to do better for these kids, and we can do better. In trying to improve our schools for all children, but particularly these underserved children, is why I want to be on the board, is to help those kids. And I think that my background is an aid to me in doing that. I have a sort of a complete bio on your table, so you can look over that. But I've been very involved in the school system, in our Charlottesville school systems, for many years in many ways. And I even went to our public school systems. I was born and bred in Charlottesville. I still know teachers and administrators in the system. So I think that in the community, I've been active in the community, helping out with affordable housing. I've represented court-appointed people who couldn't afford a lawyer otherwise. I've been on the school board now, as I say, for a year and a half, and I've worked collaboratively with fellow board members and staff. And I think that's an important attribute for a school board member to have, but you have to be willing to ask the hard questions, and I think that I've done that as well. I hope that I get the opportunity to continue to be on the school board.
You probably can't hear it out there, but I'm quietly saying to them 30 seconds when their time's almost up and counting on their good graces to actually wrap up in something like 30 seconds. So I'm going to ask a couple of questions, and I'm going to start with Juan Diego and then go that way and come around the horn this direction. So the first question I want to ask is, we hear a lot about standards of learning and those sorts of things, but what I want to know is, what's your definition of achievement?
Well, I believe that the SOAL test, that we need to test our students to see that they have achieved, but I believe that the SOAL tests are really, you know, eliminating the creativity from the classrooms. And I think achievement can be, we can set achievement for each school, but the achievement for each child is different. We have roughly 4,000 students in the school system. I think it's 4,000 different achievements that these students can achieve. And I think that that's how we have to look at it. You know, this is not a big school system, relatively speaking. I think that we have the resources in this community to identify the needs of these students so that they can achieve at the highest level. It comes back to this young girl that I work with, is that as long as each child is doing their very best, given 100%, and like that experience of learning, now I think that we have done what we can do as a community in educating our children.
Achievement. I wish I had my dictionary in front of me. Achievement, the way I would define achievement in this setting is that every child has reached a sense of satisfaction that they have put their best effort into whatever they're doing, and that they have they've done their best. One of my ideas is that we need to make sure that our teaching staff has come up with really ways to unlock that desire to learn. Once that desire to learn is unlocked, the child knows when they're achieving. We can measure achievement by tests, but we can't measure the personal satisfaction that a child gets out of knowing they have done the best they can do. That's how I would define achievement.
Achievement needs to be taken within context, whether it's the Charlottesville City Schools or other schools. I'll read some comments from former students of mine that I consider achievement, I consider excelling. One of them wrote, "Mr. High continually pushed me to excel. He took the curriculum to great lengths to make it interesting and valuable to me, and I would like to thank him for that and his tremendous support. I was willing to go out on a limb and hire an attorney so this person could get into an AP class to get in with her group because they were not going to allow her to be in that class, a geometry class. She didn't know that, but the counselor did at the high school." This is on the West Coast. Other things have been used to describe me is Vance, or Mr. High, has always pushed us to excel. He's also been an inspiration, allowing us to use scientific instruments, which I've gotten from Howard Hughes Medical Center, the University of Washington, which I've actually brought into the city and used at St. Anne's, and I could possibly do that here. If a student or teacher requested it, I could do that. So achievement, I think, can be summed up really specifically. It's helping that student reaching their potential, whatever that potential is. And as Gardner's written, there's at least six different learning types: kinetic, arts, athletics. So all those need to be addressed, but you have to have qualified teachers. And as I understand now, we have a 14-to-1 teacher to student ratio, which is within par for everyone else in the state. We need to address that, and hopefully we can get those students and help them excel. I don't see that going on right now.
I think achievement's different for every student. Some students passing the SOLs may be a great achievement for that kind of learning. They may be great artists or great at music, but maybe passing the achievements book-wise might be a great achievement for them. For others, going on to the best colleges in the nation may be the achievement we need to push. So essentially, we need to push kids towards each the highest level of achievement that they can. The SOLs are really the bar that we have to get over, both to feel good about our schools and also to meet state and federal requirements. But we need to push kids as far as they can go, whether at the high end or the low end. I think graduation is very important, so that's a measure of achievement. We have a very respectable graduation rate, but if you look at the African Americans, the underachieving African Americans, that rate is not as high as we want it to be, and we just have to do better. I think ultimately achievement is preparing each child for success in the world, and so I think we have to teach basic job skills and get them ready for success in whether it's college or the working world.
I agree with a lot of what's been said in terms of there's different ways to measure student achievement based on individual strengths and all that. I also don't believe that the SOLs are the holy grail of standards, but I do believe that it's a valuable tool for us to look at whether or not our students are learning the basic skills, whether in reading or math or anything else, that's going to allow them to be successful in school. And so I think we do need to look at achievement levels as measured by these tests and make sure that our kids have basic reading skills that are going to allow them to move on and understand what they're learning, and basic math skills, and I think we also need to look at social skills and how they've mastered them in terms of looking at achievement, because those are the skills they're going to need to be productive members of society.
Achievement for each one of us in this room is different because we view it differently. Each one of us in this room learns at a different rate, as do our students in the public schools here of Charlottesville. And my running mate and I, Juan Diego Wade, have coined the phrase teach to reach. It means that we will teach our children to reach their highest goals. We will expect them to do their best, and their best may be incrementally. With my students in Upward Bound, that's what I expect. When I'm working with them in a classroom environment, everyone comes into my room with an A, and you either stay there or you work down. If a student does not pass a class, and for us, anything less than a C is not passing, regardless of what the state says, I ask them, why did you get the grade that you got? If students understand why they do what they do, if students have expectations, they reach for those expectations. They want to live up to those expectations. And we don't expect anything less from our students than high achievement. And if you tell them that they are high achievers and you can get them to buy into that, everything that they do, even if they should miss the mark, is reaching and stretching to the highest possible ability that they have. And that's what we want to see with our students here in the city.
In the past couple of years, there's been a little discussion in the city related to a charter school proposal. And basically, for people who don't know, there was a group of area educators who proposed a charter school designed specifically to work with at-risk students in the middle school range. And I wanted to know from the candidates up here what they thought about that proposal, if they know much about that proposal in particular, or what they think about other innovative ways that we can help at-risk students, particularly in the middle school range.
Sean, I am familiar with the proposal and the issue not only in our community but across the country with regard to charter schools. And what charter schools do are dealing with specific indices or specific problems that students may have and or specific things that you may want your students to achieve. And if you will, Upward Bound is a charter school. And we happen to do those types of things that often charter schools do with a select group of students from the Central Virginia area. All of my instructors, former and past, predominantly come from the Charlottesville public school system. And I think that's interesting because my children achieve. And I believe that the types of things that you would like to see in charter schools can be done in individual classrooms. We can do them in a team teaching approach. We might consider having a group of students that have math and science expectations that really far exceed what we are doing in our schools and develop an environment for them to learn within that particular environment. I am not convinced that we need to do pullouts to put people in particular places in order for them to learn. Our schools are for that purpose. They are a learning institution, and we need to do the best that we can and expend the monies that we have been given within the system, i.e., within the buildings that we have, in order to get this done.
Come, let's come back.
I go this way? Okay, John.
Thank you. The charter school issue, I've been, you know, hearing more about it, and I've actually been in contact with Bobby Snow, and I'm not exactly sure what all the details are, but I certainly would like to know. And I think with regards to charter schools, I think that there are a lot of wonderful charter school programs with a proven track record for success. And I think if any charter school proposal, I think we need to make sure that it's based on a program that has a record of success. But I also agree with Mrs. Perrier, and that is that I think that there's no reason why we can't adopt some of the practices and strategies that a lot of these successful programs are using and apply them to our entire population of students, and I think that's the I think we want to put in place interventions that are going to benefit the most students, and so that's what I would like to see. I certainly am not opposed to a charter school, especially if it's a charter school within a school that we already have. I think that's a possibility as well.
The charter school proposal was an interesting proposal, and I appreciated them bringing it to us. It was they put a whole lot of work into it. It was basically an arts-infused middle school to focus on underachieving kids and to try to reach them through the arts. And I think that the idea has a lot of merit. The proposal itself had flaws, and our staff, after reviewing it, recommended that we not except at that time. We essentially passed over it and asked them to try to fix the problems and work with staff. We just got an email recently that they are still very much open to whatever suggestions we have, that they are willing to tailor their proposal if we want it to, instead of being 5 through 8, to be just 7th and 8th or that sort of thing, that they're open to that idea. And I think they've also talked to Mr. Flynn and others about maybe bringing it in-house as an in-school proposal. Having it as a separate building was going to cost $600,000 to start with and move up to about $1 million. And it's a lot of money to reach a relatively small number of kids, but we are having trouble with that segment of kids, and we need to look at doing things different. We have some examples of schools within a school. Our freshman academy at CHS serves about 75 or 90 students, and it's a set of classrooms that are all in the same hall. The kids travel together, and the teachers are very aimed at at-risk kids. And so these are all at-risk kids who are making the transition to high school, and we keep them together, we move them together. And the program has made a great deal of difference. Have been before it was instituted about 10 years ago, there was about a 50% of them that were failing two or more classes, and now that's down to more like 10 or 15%. So I think there are some ways that we can do it in-house rather than the expensive out-of-house option, but I'm certainly open to that as well.
Charter schools in concept work wonderfully. In reality, there's the B word, budget. If we cannot set up an independent school outside of existing structures, you need to run something within the schools or school within the school. I've seen it done successfully in Seattle in school districts where I've worked in. It does bring the school, it brings the children into a more effective, cohesive, accepting unit, and they can be with others of their potential abilities, which means a lot in middle school. There's a lot of comparing yourself to someone else, whether it's the tennis shoes you're wearing, if you're a young lady, the clothes you're wearing. So those kind of things can be acclimated, they can be assisted. So a school within a school, charter school, I think is something we could probably do and has been done at Charlottesville High School right now. There are things that can be done on a smaller level. It's, again, get the parents involved, send notes home when the student is, their grades have dropped below a C into a D range. The state of Virginia doesn't even require that. Other states require that. It's included in the evaluation for teachers. And then if it doesn't come back and there's no parent conference set up, then you send home a registered letter. Again, you've got to address it and from each individual need from that student and their family. With many of our students coming from single parent families, which makes it very difficult for them to succeed. Charter schools would work, and they do work, but again, you need parents and you need a team effort for everybody.
I have a very open mind on the concept of charter schools. Murray High School is, for Albemarle County, is a charter school. A wonderful concept. I don't know how they already had the building. Maybe that's why it wasn't such a burden for them to decide to go with that concept. I agree totally that if there are best practices, I use the term best practice, but if there are programs available that have been proven to work, there's no reason why they can't be put into the regular classroom, into the regular schools. But if a program is so innovative that it needs a separate building, a separate approach, I'm intrigued with the Village School, which was started for middle-aged girls. Middle school age girls, I'm sorry. Middle age, that's me. No, I'm not even that. but that was a concept that just took off. It for me, I thought, well, that's too bad. It's a private school. Couldn't we have done something like that within the public school system? So I'm open to the concept of charter schools. I'm also open to the concept of putting those ideas into the public school system. So I'm neither for or against charter schools, and I would evaluate any charter school proposal on its merits and how it would work best for the school system as a whole.
If a charter school proposal would come before me and I'm sitting on the council, I would have to consider it. I don't know too much about the proposal that the school board recently submitted, but I think that I would have to consider, look at all of the pluses and minuses of it, and I understand some of the concerns, the trepidation of the public. My father was a teacher in the Richmond public school system for nearly 40 years, and I've heard, you know, the concerns of vouchers and charter schools kind of sucking resources away from the public school system. I understand those concerns. I heard it. My father would come home from work. But I think that we're at the point now that if the Charlottesville public school system does not have a program or avenues that can't address maybe a program that's presented to the school board, then I think that we should consider it, because we're spending money to educate these kids and we may not be reaching them. And this proposal here, if it's feasible, if it's financially feasible, and this meeting that goes that the school board and administration set forth, and I think that we should consider it, and I think that we want to have a frank conversation with our school administration, because I'm a bureaucrat, I do county planning, and I know sometimes we can be considered roadblocks instead of helping. And so I think that sometimes when we look at these things, we say, well, how can we see how this can't work? And I don't have any position on it other than saying that if it's presented in front of me, I would have to seriously consider it.
We've heard a lot of talk recently, specifically from one of our city councilors, about the idea of single-sex schools and school uniforms. And let's see if we can get some thoughts on that.
When I served on the Jefferson School Task Force, one of the things we talked about was utilizing Jefferson School for maybe a single-sex, Rick Turner called it an academy for boys at risk, or any boy who maybe wanted to come to it. I have no problem with either single-sex classrooms. I think there's an element there where maybe parental choice comes into that, but another element where if that is a practice that works well and has been proven to work well in other places, then why not attempt to try it? I know the Village School, that middle school girl thing was a real problem for a lot of parents. And a couple of friends of mine have sent their girls there. And they have thrived there, and they've gone on to high school and just done very well. But they got them out of the public school for a particular period of time and were able to put them back in. So I'm open to concepts like single-sex, maybe sections in a school within a school, not necessarily taking them out of the whole school setting. But uniforms, I don't know whether they work or not in the public schools. People who send their children to Catholic academies and some other private schools seem to have no problem with them. So, it's just a question of parents saying, you know, I think this might work, and maybe going with that.
Well, we have examples of single-sex schools, and they work effectively, but they're expensive. Woodbury Forest is an example. And there are other schools that are private in New England, Excelsior and others. On a public-funded setting, I don't think separating the sexes or genders would be effective. Part of going to school is learning to work with the environment, the population that you're around. That means people of all sexes, all backgrounds. I don't think that would be effective to segregate those out. Uniforms. Again, it depends upon the demographic. I think it can be effective. Whether I'd recommend that for the city of Charlottesville, at this point, I would say no. I think there are enough people that are trying, and enough children, which I want to call them people, because it seems the young people today are getting older and older or maturing much faster, at least physiologically and in some ways mentally. They don't need to be segmented out with their uniform. They need to integrate. They need to learn to discuss. One of the things I would strongly propose is more of a curriculum that works around small projects, small success projects where they're actually looking to solve an issue. Uniforms, I don't think will do that. I don't think separating the sexes will. There is a difference in middle school between boys and girls. Duh. Let me roll over and put your stamp your heel on my chest. There's testosterone. There's menses. There's additive puberty. There's social dynamics, and they've all been well studied. So again, I don't think separating will do that. The more involvement of people integrating and working with their colleagues or other students would be more effective.
On the single-sex school thing, I don't think that's what we need to do right now. I mean, I'm open to consider pretty much any idea, but my gut reaction to that is that's not what we need to do. That's not what's going to close the achievement gap here. There are all kinds of things we can do to close the achievement gap, but I think doing a huge disruptive move by splitting boys and girls is not what we need right now. As to uniforms, I think there's a lot of good that could come from uniforms. I think it would need to be a public dialogue. Peggy Van Yeres and I were at a PTO meeting at Buford the other day, and the topic came up, and there was a whole lot of interest in the room for it. I was a little bit surprised at how uniformly people were supportive of it. You know, I think the downsides are that sort of the implementation of it can be hard. It squelches kids' freedom of expression, and at that age they're trying to identify themselves. But it saves a lot of money. I think over time, once you get the uniforms, I think it does save parents money. And you can have supplements for people who can't afford them, which can help even more. And I think the biggest thing is that it removes the haves and have-nots. You can't tell by looking at you whether you're rich or poor. And so I think that's a good thing. It can certainly help parents in the morning and kids getting dressed, and that's a good thing. And Mr. Flynn said that he did use uniforms in one of the schools, or maybe more than one of the schools he's been in, and the way he did it was he allowed the kids to pick it. And they picked out cool uniforms. You know, there were, of course, parameters that he had, but they were allowed to pick it, and they were very happy and excited about their uniform. So I think it's an idea. It's not what's going to close the achievement gap.
Well, I know. I wish I'd I probably would have learned a lot more in school if I'd been in a school or a classroom without girls there. But I agree with the other candidates that you know, the ideas of single sex classrooms and uniforms aren't necessarily the answer to addressing some of the achievement concerns. Could they be implemented into a broader scope of intervention? Certainly. I think there's, you know, I think if you do your research, you'll find that there are benefits to those two types of interventions as well as others. I think we really need to look at the big picture in terms of things that actually impact student achievement, teacher quality and quality of instruction, working on increasing parental involvement, and making sure that our students are ready to learn, ready when they come to school, that they have the basic literacy skills to be successful in school. I think those are the interventions that are going to help us the most, as well as looking at ways that we can use the resources we have to expand educational opportunities for the kids that need it the most. So thank you.
I think we need to consider why we would want to do single-sex schools and or have uniforms. There are students that attend single-sex schools. There are students that attend schools with uniforms, and you still have behavioral problems. Are you doing that to eradicate the behavioral problems? Are you doing that in hopes of improving achievement? There would be some outside influences or distractions that might be eradicated for the moment, but those distractions could impact the students after school when they're supposed to be doing their homework. So I think we need to make a decision about what our concerns are. And if we're concerned about students learning, are we evaluating what is going on in each individual class where the students may not be learning and where the students may be learning? Are there parameters set by the instructors of these schools or these classrooms? Do they have standards within the classroom? What is acceptable and what is not? Are we living up to those standards? Are the persons in those classrooms where the students are not learning the people for that particular group? I work with students across a myriad of educational levels, and everyone cannot teach every student. Maybe we need to look at making some personnel adjustments within the building. Maybe I've taught the higher achieving students for 50 years, and now I would like to teach some lower achieving students, which motivates me to do a better job, which motivates the students to do a better job. So we need to ask ourselves, why are we wanting to do this? And if those reasons can be justified, then we need to consider them.
I agree with that. I think that we need to identify, you know, why we want to take these actions. And if it's feasible and viable, then I think that we should consider it. I don't think it will be that hard to implement with the uniforms. It would take a while to implement, but this would be something pretty drastic. We just have, you know, all first graders, they would start at that point, and they just, by the time the children get in 12th grade, they will be used to it. It wouldn't be something we would implement now, everyone do it. And the same with same-sex education. We're only keeping them there for the 2 or 3 years that they're in those middle school years, and they'll come back at in high school. But, you know, we don't need to take these steps until we identify if the reasons that some of the problems that we have in the school system is because attire or is because some of the conflicts between male and female. So, again, I think that, you know, I'm at the point that we need to consider everything. There's very few things, if none, if any, that I'm going to completely eliminate at this point. I think that we need to consider it. But something like this, we want to see if that's what our problems are in the public school systems. And if so, we need to look into implementing them.
I have about 17 more questions, but I'm going to open it out to the audience right now. Something that occurred to me in listening to those answers, though, was if teachers should have a dress code, but I don't expect an answer to that. Because we're recording this and people are going to listen to it on the Internet on the Charlottesville Podcast Network, I'm going to ask people to come up and use the microphone. So,
hi, I'm Peter Kleeman, and I live in Charlottesville, and I'm actively involved with some transportation-related issues, and there's a federal program called Safe Routes to School, and I'm hoping that those of you who are in favor of this could actually make a good case for how you think working with available federal funding, providing a better way to have students walk and bike and use other than getting driven to school by their parents or maybe using school buses, could actually introduce students to more self-reliant behavior, experiencing the environment around them, that the trip to and from school could be part of the learning experience. And it just seems to me this is an opportunity with funding available that we should take advantage of. And I'm hoping that maybe someone could
pick somebody.
Oh, pick one person?
Yeah.
Well, how about I'll pick you. I'm sorry, I forgot your first name.
But, Charlie.
Charlie, okay.
First rule, never look at the speaker because you know they're going to pick you when you're looking at them. I know that Greenbrier Elementary was, a test school for the walk to school program, and you know, I think when we look at some of the issues with regards to you know, kids' physical fitness and problems with obesity and all that, I mean, I don't think you can lose if you can figure out a way to get them to walk to school. Now, that's not always realistic for our students, depending on where they live and how far away from school they are, but if there's some way to make it happen, I think it's a great idea. And also, I think having taken some of my students on field trips down the nature trail on the Rivanna Trail there, it's just amazing, you know, how much they enjoy it and how much they get out of it. And it's not all, you know, fun and games. It's about, you know, being responsible and learning how to cross the street and respecting nature. And also, I think if we have kids that are walking to school and we really highlight this kind of program, I think that it gives our public a chance to see these children in different environments, and I think there's increased exposure and potentially more community involvement versus just packing them on the bus and riding them to the bus stop. So I'm all for it.
Thanks. Sherry? Oh, go ahead. We'll get you next, Sherry.
My question is directed to Wanda Wade. It seems to me that it's a truth in the fact that there are no failing students, only failing teachers. And I hold that there's a lot of validity in that. And by teacher, I would expand that to mean whatever resources the teacher has at his or her disposal in order to influence the learning of the student. Now, operating from that, one of my concerns has to do with the large dropout rate, which is not really dropout, it's pushed out And I think we ought to use the right terminology because that's very important. Students are actually pushed out as they were in Texas when we told how Texas students were excelling. But they didn't tell us that out of 900 who started a program, only 500 of them were there when they really tested them. And in pushed out into GED programs and no programs. Now, it seems to me then we ought to be concerned about how can we reteach and re-educate, and not just with a uniform, but re-educate teachers. I went to a one-teacher school for 8 years. And I learned how to count at least 100. And so I just wonder, can you relate to what we need to be doing to make the teacher that primary person? I know we're saying the student, but you see, we got to say the teacher, because the student is in the hands of the teacher.
Thank you for that question. And again, I have to rely on, you know, growing up with five brothers and sisters and a father who was a public school teacher for nearly 40 years, coming home, talking about, you know, some of the things that he had to do, going to the store with him using, you know, money I could have brought a G.I. Joe with instead of, you know, he had to get some school supplies with. So I know that teachers have a very difficult job, and will be our duties as the school board to empower the administration and the teachers to carry out what we want. And I don't think the answer is really, you know, increasing the taxes, giving more money. I think that we need to really have a hard look at what we're using with the resources and the funding that we're giving to the school system now. I mean, I've seen some numbers in Charlottesville. It's, I don't know, $12,000-$13,000 per pupil, top five in the state. Some of the other school systems ahead of us are Northern Virginia. So, I mean, I think that we have the resources. We just need to look at how we're allocating those resources and what we're doing with it. And we need to have some frank talk with some of the teachers and find out what are some of their concerns in the classrooms. What do they perceive as the problem or reality in preventing them from educating every single child? And I think that that's something we may have that information. I'm not in favor of doing a lot more studies and tests and things like that. A lot of times we just need to get in the room with some teachers that's been here a few years and a long time to see what the problems are, and let's take that approach.
Sherry, did you had your hand up? You need the microphone.
I have 17 questions, so we have to address it to one person.
Yes.
Eeny, meeny, miny, moe. I don't know. I'll address it to Ned. What is your sense of race relations in our school system, and what is your what are your thoughts about the role of the school board in dealing with this issue?
Yeah, that's obviously a tough problem that's faced across the nation, inside schools and outside schools, and I think that one of the problems our school system has is that in elementary school the kids are all grouped together, and so they interact together. They're all in the same class. The teachers are differentiating learning, and so they have different groupings within the class, but the classes are together. But by the time you get to middle school and high school, the way our classes are currently structured is we have honors classes, AP classes, and a frightfully low number of African Americans are in those classes. And that's part of this whole achievement gap problem that we need to, and obviously we don't need to lower the bar for those classes. What we need to do is raise the children up so that they're in those classes and so that our kids are together again in these classes, in all the classes. And so I think that's a critically important part of why we want to close the achievement gap, is to get our kids back together, because they're frightfully separated now in the upper grades. You know, as far as the day-to-day interactions, I think that, like anywhere, people tend to hang around people who look like themselves and are like themselves. And I wish for our society that that wasn't true, but I think that in our high school, like other high schools and other places, that still tends to be true. I know that it's not, that there is interaction. There's interaction on sports teams, good camaraderie on sports teams. I was at a play at CHS last night where the leading role, romantic role, was a African-American male, and he had a white romantic interest. And so, you know, there are positive things about our relationships, but we need to get the kids mixed together more, and I think that we can do more of that. And I think the main thing we can do is raise achievement so that they're together. We can't make people socialize, but we can create events that they go to, and they do. They go to dances together and that sort of thing. But anyway, it's a tough issue everywhere.
Donna, and then I'll come over here, and then Dave, and then Carl.
I'm going to do something that I hate it when people do this at a forum. I taught in the public schools of Charlottesville from 1970 to 1984. During that time, I was a teacher leader, and we had a process of negotiations with the school board, and it was legal at the time, where the school board appointed a number of their representatives, and the teachers had a number of representatives, and we sat together in a room, not in public, and we hammered out issues. And then for some reason somebody at the state level decided that that was not possible anymore. So I'm going to ask this question to Sue Lewis, because nobody has asked anybody Sue a question, but it really goes to all of you. Is it what policy would you put in place to assure that teachers have a voice in the decision-making process? And I will say to all of you, because how many people are we electing this year? Two? Three. And I want to say to all of you, I am so impressed with what you're bringing here that we're not going to lose whoever we elect. And thank you for being willing to run. But I want to say what I said to them when I chaired the negotiating team. I said, you know, on the first day of school, if all of you are sick, all your administrators, all the secondary people are sick, you know, that's not a problem. But if all the teachers are sick, you can't open school. So I want to speak up for the people on the front line. And I know, because I've been there at every level, from advanced to a class where the only way you could get in there was to be a failure, and I was teaching it. And I'm saying every teacher wants the best. Every teacher. They need the support, the training to get there. Thank you.
All right. I actually, too, am annoyed that there seems to be some structure at the state level that says teachers can't talk to school board people. I don't know, and I will make it a task for myself to find out exactly how we are dealing with teacher representation right now. I do not know that. I admit to ignorance on that. But I personally find absolutely no reason why the most important person in the classroom, the teacher, as far as the student is concerned, is not able to interact with the administration and the school board in any kind of positive way. I will, if elected, I will absolutely explore all avenues to allow that conversation to continue. And I'm calling it a conversation because that's what I think it really is. It's not a negotiation. It's a conversation. If school board members, and I will say that I don't like the idea of individual teachers coming to individual school board members. I think that's a bad idea because it just creates all sorts of problems. But I have absolutely no problem with teacher representatives sitting down with the school board as a whole and talking about issues that they find in the classroom.
I don't mind jumping in.
Not in favor of this format.
I would just like to say, just in answer to your question, I just finished serving 8 years on the Loudoun County School Board, and we always talk to teachers. We always talk to teachers. We love talk to lots of teachers in, individually in small groups. There's no state rule that says you can't talk to teachers. I just don't believe there is one. But I just have one question, and that's, you know, I hear all these issues, and I've been reading the paper. I've only lived here for 3 months, so but I read the papers, and I'm very interested in schools. And the key, I think, to an awful lot of what you're talking about is what teachers are doing in the classroom and how teachers relate to kids and whatnot. And I want to know, and I guess I'll ask, well, let's see. Since you're on the school board already, I just want to ask, how much are we willing to commit in the school system to teacher training to deal with these issues? I mean, that's a dollar amount. My experience is that often teacher training is one of the first things cut when budget gets tough. And I would hope, I just want to hear what you feel about the value of teacher training.
It's critical. I'm reaching for my information here because you ask a dollar amount. I asked that specific question last year about how much was available for teacher training. And I think it was $100,000. I'm trying to look here. Is the money? It's very important. Teacher development is critical. We're putting a lot of money towards it. Last year, we put an extra $80,000 in it for teacher subsidies to pay for them to work on curriculum and curriculum alignment. But we also had, I think it's $100,000 or more set aside for general teacher development. But there's really nothing more important than having a great teacher in the class. There are statistics that show that, and that's what we are very much focusing on now. And this year we're also working on a new teacher evaluation form. And just yesterday the Director of Instruction passed out a sheet at the City Council meeting, and this was just one of the things that they're doing, but they're going around and looking at classes. They're having principals do it, and the instruction team going around looking at teachers and looking at how they're doing on different things and evaluating them. And so, you know, there's this whole sheet, and for instance, one of them is communicates why concept is being taught. So they go sit in the classroom and they look at these things, and that one was low. For this sample of ones they went in on that particular day or days, it was 6%. And there are other ones that they did great on. But it's a way to look at how each teacher is doing and to focus our professional development in a targeted way on what teachers are missing to get to kids. And that's just a critical part of closing the achievement gap. So we're very strongly in favor of that.
Dave, you were next.
Thanks, Sean. I'm Dave Norris. I have a question. We have about 5,000 adults in our community in Charlottesville alone that don't have a high school diploma. And I know the city schools has an active adult education program in place. And I'm wondering what ideas you would have for strengthening that program. And I'll give you one idea of a weakness in the program as I see it is that they're located, and most of their classes are offered, or many of their classes are offered, in a location where there's no access, there's no public transportation to that location in the evenings. And so somebody that doesn't have a high school diploma, doesn't have their own automobile, it's very difficult. And there are people that do walk half a mile or a mile to the nearest bus stop because they value education. But what, in general, can we do to strengthen our adult education program? And I'll direct it to Juan.
I think that's very important. I think we'll look at the budget and see what resources we're putting there now and see what we can do to improve that. But I can tell you that the impact that it could have on one's life. Our church recently did a help with the Pacham sleepover. I go to Olivet, but this particular one was at Sojourner's Church. And we're here. I was there with my youth group, and we're there talking and communicating. And it was a gentleman over in the corner, and you could tell that he was in pain. He was just wasn't doing well, and they had we had a bag of medicine and aspirins and all type of things that you could need. And the advisor there said, you know, what's wrong? He said, you know, I have a headache. I can't. I don't know. You know, what's wrong? You know, and we pointed out that you know the bag is over there, and he said, you know, I can't read. And so just like that, we were able to get him some aspirin because it was a bag full of different things. And so it's really impacting the quality of life that we have as an adult. And if we can just do things like that, provide outreach opportunities for adults to continue their education, their training, the enrichment, I think that it will make this community that much better, and that's what I would do. I don't have specific numbers, but we really need to look at that, and you know, we could pull some resources with Parks and Recs or some other parts of the city, and I think that's something that we can do. I mean, this is, you know, one of the best universities in the country here. We could, you know, use that as a resource as well.
My name is Carl Ackerman. The issue I'd like to address is safety in the schools, specifically coming off the article in the Daily Progress a couple of days ago about Buford Middle School. I looked into it, and apparently there have been 19 incidents of assault with teachers at Buford. There have been 24 recommendations for expulsion. There have been zero expulsions. And I guess my question would be, what is the role of the school board in terms of protecting teachers, staff, students, including the students who are violent in our schools? And I guess I'll ask Ms. Purrier, since nobody's asked her a question. If you were on the board, what would you do differently? Thank you.
One of my concerns is safety in the schools of all people within that building. And I think we must first and foremost look at what's going on at the time that these particular incidents occur. And I think that conversations need to be held with those persons involved, whether they were the perpetrators of the incident or the one that was affected by the incident. What was going on at the time that this incident occurred? You must look at everything in context. And with those reports coming through from a contact point and a factual point as best you can get the facts at that time, when those things are presented to the school board, because those actions are taken in closed session, the school board would have the necessary tools that they would need in order to review each and every case on a case-by-case basis. There are certain things that go on within the buildings that never reach the school board. But first and foremost, we must all recognize that each and every one of us are people, regardless of how young we are. And each and every one of us has a bad day, regardless of how young we are. And those things must need, in my opinion, need to be taken into consideration. The instructors also must have very clear instructions on what is acceptable in his or her classroom. I have been in lots of classrooms where there are no expectations of the students at all. So when the students do something that the instructor thinks is over the top, they get upset. But if there are no limits and boundaries set for students, they don't know how to behave. They are students. They're trying to become productive members of our society. And every student needs to understand consequences for their actions, as well as the instructors in those classrooms understanding consequences of his or her actions within that environment. And if everyone understands those things and we are trained and everyone knows what to expect and the guidelines are set out, when incidents occur, we have a pattern to follow.
I'm going to follow Bill Lucy's lead, and talk about the time here. We're ending promptly at 11, as you can see. There's a couple questions up here in the front that we'll go to, and then we'll go into the closing comments.
I was hoping that some of you would talk about restorative justice as one of the tools you could use in these confrontations of teachers and kids with each other. Any comments?
I think we're all familiar with what we've seen in the progress the last 2 days. And I've talked to Tim Flynn, and I am familiar with restorative justice. And for the restorative justice individual who was here earlier, David Saunier, yes, he's here in the room right now if you want to address some direct questions to him, and he can answer about the program itself. There are problems in the city schools with violence, with behavior. And yes, you have expectations and you list these, but there are some people that don't bother with following the rules. And what do you do with them? You can do in-house suspensions. You can send them outside the schools for a suspension for 10 days, and then they come back in. And then the school board has to actually vote on expulsions. Some of these kids do need to be expelled. From what Mr. Flynn told me, there's a group of about 100 to 150 students at Buford that are issues that will go right on through the high school. Then what do you do with these students once they are expelled? Well, you need to put them through an alternative setting. Alternative setting means a school. We need to increase the size of the school we have now as our alternative setting or our alternative school site. It's too small. It's an existing building or brick and mortar place, but it's too small. That's going to be something that needs to be considered in the budget. It hasn't been dealt with or addressed as far as I know. Restorative justice will work. It seems to work. It's an inclusive program. It gets all the students talking, identifying others, respecting their identities and opinions and who they are. I'd like to see how it continue over the next 5 years, so come back and after it's been fully implemented and see how it will work and how successful it has. You never can tell from someone's sale flyer, okay? You've got to see something over a period of time, 2, 3, 5 years, I would think minimal, but I think it's a really relative and a very beneficial program.
All right, get the last question.
I'm Mary Gaston. I used to be a kindergarten teacher. I wanted to ask Mrs. Perrier if you would be willing to be specific about certain educational practices within the classroom that you think contribute to the achievement gap, or if you want to be positive, educational practices that help overcome it. And we know that so much of the achievement gap is influenced by things at home and levels of socioeconomic, but I was be interested in your specific ideas of educational practices within the classroom.
In thinking of educational practices within a classroom, I think of inclusion of the students in the classroom. One of the best ways that I have always worked with, and it may not be anyone's particular method, is a writing exercise that's not very long. It doesn't have anything to do with how well you write grammar or punctuation or even if you can spell, but a particular concern of the student at the time. Generally, what went on at home last night? Or bringing in a picture that I took of my students the day before and asking them to write what they see as a positivism in that picture. And when students begin to talk about what is positive, and I always want to know what positive happened at home, and often a student will tell you something that you may perceive as a negative, but because of what happened from it as a positive, and getting the conversation going and including them in the process. One of the most fascinating things that I have ever seen when I worked with a group of special education students during the Hubert Humphrey campaign. We worked with students that had a myriad of learning disabilities. And the presidential candidate, Mr. Humphreys, was scheduled to come to our center. And I had worked with a young man, Mary, for weeks and weeks on end just to try to get him to learn to count because everyone told me he could, and I believed that he could. And no matter what he did, he didn't. And Mr. Humphreys came in and he said, "Good afternoon, young man." And he came up to me, and I had on a dress, with 8 buttons down the front. And he went 1, 2, 3. He counted all 8 buttons. And because I had encouraged him and talked to him about the importance of counting for our presidential candidate, he counted all 8 of my buttons.
Now, I have the unenviable task of cutting off the questions, even though there's people out there who still want to ask questions. And I don't know if anybody could see the body language up here, but when you get a bunch of people up here who have as many ideas as this group does, every single one of them wanted to answer every single question. And it would be 3 in the afternoon before we'd get out of here. So hopefully, if they have anything that burned on them in the questions, they'll address that in their closing statements. Who hasn't gone first yet? Charlie? We'll go Charlie and then Ned and come around that way. And we'll do 2-minute closing statements, and then we'll be all set.
First of all, I'd like to thank all of you all for being here and for some very valuable questions and input. And in kind of sitting back and listening, and I realize that there are a lot of things that I agree with the rest of these candidates. And so I guess the question is, what do I bring to the table that might be different? And what I can say is that it is my experience, having worked in a variety of different educational settings in the city, that has kind of shaped my beliefs as to how we can improve our schools. And first and foremost, I believe that our teachers, all of our teachers, want all of our students to be successful. And I think that if we as a school board provide them with the support, the training, and the resources to do that, that we will close that achievement gap. Also, based on my experience working with kids, I learned that each and every one of our parents, no matter what we might think otherwise, wants their child to be successful. And they may not have the resources, they may not have the support, they may not have the education necessary to make that happen, but they do want their children to be successful. And I think that we as a school board need to do whatever we can to empower our parents. And finally, I've learned from my students that they are looking to us for guidance and for answers. And no matter what we think about whether or not a kid cares about school, they all care and they all want to do well. And so I think that my experience as a teacher is going to be an invaluable asset to helping us bring about substantial change in our city schools. Thanks a lot.
I'm going to kind of go off script here because there's so much that we didn't get a chance to talk about, particularly the achievement gap. We didn't really have a general question about what we would do about the achievement gap or what we've been doing. A piece of research that we were recently given, the Closing the Achievement Gap by a professional educator, the little heading of it says, to increase achievement levels, minority low-income students, we need to focus on what really matters, high standards, challenging curriculum, and good teachers. And that's what we've been doing, and I think that there's a perception out there that we haven't been doing much. We've just been sitting back the last couple of years, and that's just not at all the case. This is a sort of a random list of things that I thought up that have happened over the last 2 years that I've been on the board. We have a new PVC job coach who works with over 700 kids, helping them get towards jobs. We have new dual enrollment with PVCC. We've started data-driven decision-making. We have a data warehouse now, and this is really an important concept, that the teachers are looking at how the kids do on tests and going back and reteaching. In our day, the teachers would just give you a test, you pass, fail, whatever, move on to the next subject. But now we're expecting our teachers to learn what our kids know, to push the ones who already know it, and to go back and reteach the ones who haven't learned it. And that's a critically important concept. We're aligning our curriculum to the SOL. That doesn't mean that's all the teacher is going to teach, and it doesn't tell the teacher how to teach, but it tells them what has to be taught, and it has to be aligned with SOLs. If we don't teach them what's on the SOLs, how can they pass the SOLs? So we've been working on that. We created a 30 seconds. You're killing me. There's a long list of things we've been doing the last 2 years, and I want to have the opportunity to continue to do that. As far as the safety at Buford, my daughter is an eighth grader. I feel safe putting her on the bus, sending her off to school. There have only been two of those, two, maybe three of those recommended expulsions have come before the board, because that's just the way the system works. It goes to central office. Central office makes a decision. If they want to send it to the board, they send it to the board. There's a few more in the pipeline that are coming up. But we hired a dean at Buford because it's so important to have discipline there. We had a presentation from the Restorative Justice Committee just at our board meeting this week with David Saunier. I've talked to David. I've known him for years. We went to high school at the same time, and I've talked to him over the years since he started this program. In fact, I went to the first training session that he had on restorative justice, so that very much interests us. So anyway, I'll stop talking, but I hope I get the chance to continue my work. There's a lot of things we are doing and a lot more that we can do.
It's always a wonder, how do you surmise something in 2 minutes when effectively it would take a lot longer? When I was at Buford on February 9th for the science fair, I met some students, I met some parents, and I walked outside to try to get a feel for what it was like to go back there where I'd done my student teaching in 1990. One thing was quite clear. It was a different school. In a building, still a structure. I talked to one Spanish teacher. She came up to me and she said, if you get elected, I want to say when I'm elected, I need some chalk. Simple chalk. Well, I'm making a promise now. If I'm elected, or I should say when I'm elected, I will donate the $3,000 stipend that which are paid every year as school board members toward a fund just for paying for teachers' needs. Merchandise they pull out of their own pocket you never hear about, but it's money for their salaries, and considering Charleston is an expensive place to live these days. We always need to be positive in the classroom. It's an understatement, but we do. You address or face a child with a smile, they'll smile back. We never think about what goes on behind the smile for there and what happened last night. We have a lot of students in school who are coming from single-parent households. That's been known to not help with their education. Students from full households or where parents are involved do better in school. That's a fact. Studies have shown that. And we have a high potential of single parents in the city of Charlottesville. So we need to get those parents into the decision processes. Those that don't have high school diplomas, get their GEDs. The way to get GEDs is that people go in to the homes with the GED material and tutor those parents. And in tutoring those parents, it'll pull up, by the effect, the students in the household. They'll see what the parent's doing by role modeling, by their parents. And finally, I want everyone to understand, when we're talking up here of budgets and talking numbers in this room here, this lovely room, having our breakfast and making a lot of dialogue, we're talking about students. We're talking about people, lives. And they're not monopoly pieces. It bothers me. Every one of my students I always saw as a friend. And I tried to say, I'm an open door if you need to call me. And I would give them my number. And some of them took advantage. And I've been invited to weddings and been told how much I was appreciated and what a difference in their lives I made because I made that extra effort and a door open. This was after hours. This is after I retired. So that thing, remember, you're always a mentor, whether you're teaching a Bible class, Sunday school, whether you're on the sidewalk. You need to help some time or take some time with a student and a parent. We're all students.
I actually wanted to respond to a couple of things that were said, and then I'll attempt to wrap up in the 30 seconds that you'll give me at the end. I was struck by Sherry's question about racism and the school system. And I think one of the functions of the school board is to ensure that there is a culture that is very clearly defined for everybody in the school system, that racism is not to be tolerated at all. I know there are children who are being subject to discipline that because of their color, that the same behavior on the part of a white child would not be disciplined. I know that. I've heard that from parents, from teachers. So I know that's happening. So I think the school board's one of the things that the school board has to say is that sort of culture has to be eliminated. We can't tolerate that. What we have to do, I think the function of the school board is first of all to hire the best people possible. That's a given. And to provide for those best people clear policies and expectations, and then to hold them accountable. That's that may sound awfully businesslike, but then I've spent 25 years in the business world, so I didn't spend 25 years in the educational field. I would bring a different perspective to the school board that I think has not been there. It's not just a business, but it is a business, and we businesses hire the best people. They set clear policies and expectations, and they hold them accountable. And they pay them, yes, and that's part of it. But so my perspective is not going to be, I do not have educational theories coming out of my head. I have clear thinking, clear judgment. I have financial background. I can read the budget, and let me tell you, I was not happy when I read this budget.
Why? This is a question I get all the time with a 3.5-year-old daughter. Why? Why do I want to be on the school board? I want to be on the school board because I'm committed. I'm committed to this community. My wife, Claudette, and I, we're very committed. We're involved with a lot of community activities. My sheet is on a paper, on a page there. We wanted to keep it to one page, so I couldn't list half of the things that I've done in this community, volunteered to show the things that I've done, and a lot of them dealt with youth. Just want to share quickly one program that I've done. I was mentored and shadowed the same 5 young men from the fourth grade at Walker all the way through high school, and they just graduated in May of 2005, three of them in college now. So I've felt like, even though Gabriella's only 3 years old, not in the school system yet, I feel like I've had 5 kids to go through the system. Very involved with their parents and the school administration. I know the wonderful opportunities that we have in the school system because they were afforded some of those. But I also saw some areas that could be improved. One of those is parental involvement. If I wasn't there to let the parents know, you know, this is the time you need to talk to the school administration, see about those classes that you need to take, because if not, when you finish, you could have all A's, but not the right classes to go to college, or how to deal with this particular situation. They're working parents, like you said, a lot of them are single parents, and they need that bridge. And I'm often asked, you know, what's the one thing that you would do if you were on the school board? And the one thing that I would do, if the first meeting, that I would make a proposal that we move our meetings from the library. I absolutely hate that place. I look at it on TV, and I look at that big background. If we don't move it, I'll fall asleep in there. You're seeing that he's not interested. So I think that's one thing I would do to be committed, is go into the community, maybe have it in churches, in the schools, in the community centers or something like that. But that's one thing that I would do that I think will have a direct impact immediately on getting parents in the community more involved. Please vote for Juan Diego Ricardo Wade on May 2nd, 2006. Thank you.
I'm running for school board because I believe education is a right and not a privilege. Everyone deserves that right. Everyone deserves to move from a state of dependence as a child with your families to a state of independence as an adult and a productive member of this society. Charlottesville is a great city. It has problems like any other city, and to those degrees, it varies because of the size. But if any of you in this room are operating under the assumption that education has nothing to do with your life, you're sadly mistaken. If these students slip through the cracks and are uneducated, it will impact everyone in this room, regardless of where you live, regardless of how much money you make, and regardless of the color of your skin. For 26 years, I have dedicated my life to budgets and communities and committees and all of the various and sundry things that go together in a pot to make a child a 360-degree person. That is a circle. That is whole. They're whole from an academic standpoint. They're whole from a psychological standpoint. They're whole from a moral standpoint and an educational standpoint. I love my children, the 2 that I birthed, and I don't know how many hundreds that I've had an impact on. And one of the things that I pride myself in is working with the parents. We speak all the time about education of the children, but it's a hand-in-hand process. We must educate the parents along with the students. And one of my most successful and rewarding activities is when I have a parent come to me, whether they're a single parent or a dual parent, and they are going back to school to do something to improve themselves, to stay with their students. And I would like your vote on May the 2nd. Thank you.
I want to thank you all for coming to this historic event. And I want you to, all of these people hate me for the timekeeping. I like them all, and I think that May 2nd is going to be one of the hardest decisions any of us have ever made in the voting booth, and if you'll join me in thanking them for being here.
You've been listening to a candidates forum for the 3 open seats on the Charlottesville City School Board on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, a public community service of WordCast Productions. Please let us know what you think of our programming by leaving a comment on our blog, sending an email to seantubbs@seavillepodcast.com, or calling us at 434-566-1217. I'm Sean Tubbs, and thanks for listening, and remember to vote on May 2nd.